The state versus IBM, why neither side won. Pat Bauer under fire from members of his own party. The bid for a second Super Bowl and the latest in the race for governor. That plus an Obama punching bag in Muncie and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending July 20, 2012. Miller,
proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, a legal battle between state government and IBM sparked when a billion-dollar contract to modernize welfare services was canceled, ended with both sides losing.
Governor Mitch Daniels didn't like the ruling. It's a political defeat for him that amounts to one of his bigger losses.
There'll be an appeal, and we frequently win those, so let's see what happens.
Marion County Judge David Dreyer considered the testimony of 96 witnesses along with a million pages worth of documents before deciding that the state owed IBM the relatively small amount of $12.5 million.
And they were entitled to like $12 million, most of which is equipment, cost for equipment that's been retained by the state since the contract was terminated.
Dreyer's ruling says it was a case of misguided government policy and overzealous corporate ambition. House Minority Leader Pat Bauer thinks the ruling provides Democrats with a campaign issue.
Privatizing poor relief. I mean, that's the kind of issues we need to dwell on.
The governor, however, wants voters to believe this is a story with a happy ending.
The goal is to fix what we found, which was an unacceptably fraud-ridden, error-ridden, overexpensive, paper-driven welfare system, probably the worst in the country.
Was justice served in the IBM case? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Eric Holcomb, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Leslie Weidenbender, editor at thestatehousefile.com. I'm Wich TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, the governor says the welfare system has been improved despite the lawsuit. Is that the bottom line?
I think the bottom line is that this was, I mean, there's no good way to spin this from the Republican perspective, from the governor's perspective. It was a debacle. They should not have gone with IBM. The IBM experience in Texas was an abysmal failure, and they went ahead and did it here just as well. Now, you know, having said that, he didn't lose as much in this lawsuit as he could have lost. I think the prayer was something close to $200 million.
IBM was asking for between $150 and $170 million.
A lot more than they got. And on the other hand, the state didn't want to give them anything. Now, it's good that the error rate has improved. The ranking of Indiana for error rate has improved. But I assume it's due to the equipment that they've now gotten. But if they had invested in that equipment and in training the existing employees, we could have gotten from there to there with an awful lot less expense. So there's no good way to spin it. And, you know, the idea that you could even put something as complicated as poor relief, having individual people talk to computers is just, you know, it was doomed from the beginning, and he should have realized that. So it is a political failure for him.
Well, Mitch Daniels has gotten a lot of credit for changing state government in a lot of ways, but this is one case where it didn't work.
Well, I would say first I was struck. It was a bit odd that the judge called this press conference. It looked like he was trying out for some reality judicial show like Judge Judy. I'm not surprised by that, trying to draw the attention to that side of it. I do agree with the governor. This will be appealed. We have won previous appeals from these courts, so we'll see how it ends up. But the spin is the taxpayers have an improved product. It's the most timely. It's the most accurate. When Mitch Daniels assumed office, he came into an office where the feds were penalizing the state. And now they're not. Now we're getting more money back because the system has improved. So we're getting awards now. The difference is with this administration is if we don't get it right the first time, we keep at it until we do. And it is right now.
Jim, you pointed out that the administration has streamlined a lot of agencies, that the most famous or infamous perhaps being wait times at the BMV, where famously you can get through in and out now in what is the average time? 15, 20 minutes maybe, if that, compared to a month or two in the past. So, I mean, he has done some things where he deserves credit. I think that what's trickier here is, and the BMV is not Family and Social Services Administration. With that agency, you're dealing with lots of issues, lots of challenges, people who are dealing with health issues, who are dealing with economic challenges. By definition, you know, what might work for a computerized punch screen in one agency, probably we can stipulate in hindsight, doesn't necessarily translate or equate the same way to a social services agency. And I think that's the lesson that was learned to the tune of however many millions of dollars were spent both in the settlement and
actually, the 12.5 million here, but earlier the judge ruled that the state owed IBM $40 million.
Well,
most
also,
of that was for subcontractor fees.
And don't forget legal.
To the same entity that used to employ the head of SSSA.
ACS, so, which is now the agency that's
and don't forget legal
running
fees.
Welfare
there is a,
services.
There is a winner here, by the way, to the tune of about $10 million, the law firm that handled this, represented the state in this
Barnes and
settlement.
Thornburg.
So.
One of the most interesting things I thought was when you really got deep into the decision to see the relationships that existed between all these companies and the fact that ACS, the company Ann was referring to, had employees working in the state offices even though they were not supposed to have any direct relationship with the state. I think it's clear that this did not, it was not handled well. Any huge change like this is not going to go well.
But it was not handled well by both the state and IBM.
I think the judge certainly made that clear. This and you can tell by reading the decision that the other players involved didn't handle things in a great way either.
But, you know, it isn't that this was a case of first impression, because they did the same thing or tried to do the same thing in Texas with disastrous results.
And, you know, that was discussed in the decision, and it seemed like the state realized this was a big problem. It was surprising the amount of work they did to try to prevent something like that from happening like it did in Texas, and yet we had at least some of the same problems.
It was a 10-year, $1.3 billion contract. The plug was pulled after three.
The cost would have been to continuing to not have a successful program, just like we assumed when we took office. And that would have been where the fraud, waste, and abuse would have really racked up on taxpayers. That's been eliminated. There is no, the fraud is at an all-time
and
low.
And I do think it's worth noting that with the BMV, everybody talks about how great the BMV was now.
Had
there was a lot, there were a lot of problems when the BMV system changed over, and that's because any huge change like this is not going to go easily.
Right, but if a fraction of the money that was spent in this litigation had been spent in training and paying employees to do that job in the first place and putting the hardware in place, we could have saved tens of million dollars with the same result, and that's where the fault lies.
Moving on. Pat Bauer, the minority leader in the Indiana House of Representatives, said this week that he is holding on to his leadership position, quote, day by day and dialogue by dialogue. Last week, key Democrats unsuccessfully sought a vote of no confidence in Bauer after attempts were made to put others in charge of Democratic campaigns. Here's what Bauer said on Wednesday.
You know, some people are over-anxious at this point, and you know how that is. It's a you know, they want it now, and now the right time is in November, but that's what we're having discussions.
Eric Holcomb, can Pat Bauer survive this challenge?
Well, I think I should yield the balance of my time to Ann. She has more inside information than I probably do, but I will say.
But you have an opinion in it.
But I do.
Republicans have to be watching this with interest.
I'm hopeful that Representative Bauer holds on for at least 100 or more so days. It certainly reminds me how much I like my job.
You would like to see Pat Bauer in control of the Democratic campaigns.
It is. It's hard for me to keep up whether Dan Parker's in or out or in, or Pat Bauer's in or out or in, so I'll leave that to their side.
Yeah, I mean, both Bauer and people who are trying to unseat Bauer have made the point this week that they're fighting with each other and fighting over campaign strategy while the Republicans have a strategy
that's
deployed.
That's clearly the problem. And, I think that there's a majority in the caucus who think that the entire campaign structure would benefit from having everybody have input in that. And Pat Bauer, if Pat Bauer agrees with that, it seems to me they can just resolve this and go forward. And if he doesn't, then there could be further developments.
So Pat Bauer is trying to secure the support that he needs to remain in the minority leader position. And just this afternoon, he sent out on a personal email account an endorsement from a Teamsters union showing that he has support from outside the caucus. it looks like desperation.
I think so, too. I mean, he got the feeling that he'd made a lot of calls looking for someone willing to let him send something like this out. Pat Bauer has fought back challenges before, so there's no doubt that he is savvier than a lot of people give him credit for. But this is the biggest challenge he's faced, and I'm not sure he can survive it.
And Democrats, those who will talk, say that their fear is that what's going on now will lead to election losses. And while there will be a vote for the leader after the November election, and Bauer may well be removed then no matter what happens, they're worried that too much damage will take place in the meantime.
No, sure. They're at a 20-seat disadvantage, too, and I think a lot of members of the Democratic caucus are still adjusting to that disparity. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that they were neck and neck or even in the majority.
They were in the majority 2 years ago, 60-40
Republican. So you look at 60-40 now, and that's only seven away from giving Republicans effectively a supermajority, whereby Democrats, as is the case with their counterparts across the rotunda in the Senate, have no ability to stop any legislative freight train. They can't walk out if they
were to reach the magic number. Well, speaking of walkout, how much does this have to do with a failed walkout strategy that Pat Bauer employed?
I don't think it has that much to do with the failed walkout strategy. I think it has to do with the desire for change and the desire for more participation in the process. There's no question that Pat Bauer's done a lot for the caucus through the years, and nobody's begrudging him that. But they think that the process ought to be more open and there ought to be more participation. And either he adapts to that or something else happens.
I'm not sure I would wish his position or even Brian Bosma's as the House Speaker on anyone, because in both cases, certainly it's tougher when you're in the minority and you don't have as many perks and carrots to wave in front of people. I mean, everybody's in a worse mood to begin with. But even when you're Speaker and Brian Bosma's having to deal with different factions of the party, the freshmen who in many cases have attitudes that are a little bit to the right of some of those.
A little bit to the right.
I'm trying to...
even in this century.
It's hurting cats regardless of which
party
or
which...
But you
don't want it out in the open like the Democrats have it now.
Well, you know, sometimes you have to...
I'm hoping they
break eggs to get an omelet.
Change until after the election.
All right. Indianapolis has set its sights on the 2018 Super Bowl. A private consulting firm says the direct economic impact from the 2012 Super Bowl totaled $176 million. That made civic leaders decide to try again. The Super Bowl committee will put together a bid due in early 2014. In the end, team owners will vote and decide. Colts owner Jim Irsay says he's ready to fight for Indianapolis.
It's tough when the vote's going down. You're nervous, but we're optimistic. Our mentality is we are going to get one.
Leslie Weidenbender, will that bid be successful?
I think I feel less optimistic about this one than the last one. I think when the Indianapolis built a stadium, it was all but guaranteed that a Super Bowl would come to Indianapolis. And there's no doubt the city did a fantastic job hosting the game, but I'm not sure there's enough opportunity for the NFL to make money here. The stadium's not big enough. Not all of the same amenities are available here as in some other places, and I'm not sure the NFL will come back.
Well, and Jim Irsay said that some of the NFL owners thought we need another major hotel in order to get this bid again.
Well, apparently some of the beautiful people, I guess, flew in on their private jets for the game and then flew out the same day. I guess maybe they thought the accommodations weren't sufficient, but we're talking about 2018, so there's time to probably put a few more pup tents up, even luxurious ones, downtown.
Yeah, but do we need them? Do
well,
we need them
that's
for
a good
any
question.
That's
the
problem.
Time?
We can't sustain a new major hotel.
I guess the point I would make is it took two times for Indianapolis to get it before. You know, they went and were rejected, lost to Dallas, came back. So if not 2018,
we lost a bit in the early 90s, too. So
I think there's an attempt even beyond 2018 if it fails then.
Has some of our success from this year worked against us? Because now there are northern cities who are saying, look, it can be done, and so it opens up the field. There are more competitors.
Great for them. Happy to be the model and the example. I think we did such a fantastic job. Everyone wants to date Indianapolis right now, whether you're a big convention or a big event. And we rose to the occasion. We all came together. Everyone had a great experience. So I don't know what the zip line fad will be in 2018, but it'll be something, and we'll rise to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be great if it happened. The question is whether it can happen with other stadiums, other new stadiums being built and being given preference. And the one concern I have is that the Democratic National Committee invited Indiana to make a presentation for a Democratic National Convention, and they're not going to do both.
Right. All the eggs are in the Super Bowl
basket.
Hey, how many other cities, though, can say, you know, we want it back, but we can't, we're not going to go after it until the 2018 Super Bowl because we're too tied up with those Final Four and the Olympic trials. We're kind of busy right now. I think a lot of cities would like to be and have similar problems, if you want to call it that.
All right. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in connection with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, should Indianapolis pursue another Super Bowl? Your choices are A, yes, it's a no-brainer, B, no, it's a big hassle, or C, a political convention makes more sense. Last week's question was, do you miss Indiana's 2008 status as a presidential battleground? 50% said yes, it was exciting. 29% said no, it was too much. 21% said, how about a happy medium? To take part in the poll, just go to WFYI.org/IWIR. and look for the poll. Mike Pence continues to hold a lead in the money race as the candidates for governor released their second quarter results this week.
The addition of running mate Vi Simpson helped boost John Gregg's fundraising. He raised $1.8 million in the second quarter. It's less than the $3 million raised by Mike Pence, but the Gregg campaign is expressing confidence.
We've tripled our fundraising pace over the last 3 months, and we feel like we're in the position that we need to be to run our campaign.
Money is less of an issue for Mike Pence and his running mate Sue Ellspermann, and that's why the Republican campaign has been spending at a faster rate. The cash on hand numbers tell the story. Gregg has $3 million in the bank, Pence $5.5 million. There's no telling how high the numbers may go.
Now, we don't have a fundraising goal. I think many a candidate has said it takes what it takes to win an election, and that's what we're hoping for, is to raise what it takes to win this election.
John Schwanis, what do those numbers say to you?
Well, I think it shows that both campaigns, nobody's destitute here, though both. Clearly, the Pence campaign is in the driver's seat with more money in the bank, having been more successful this time raising money. But I think they'll both be able to get their messages out at some point. I think the biggest story there is if you look at the out-of-state contributions, and I think this is probably to be expected. You look at Mike Pence, who has been
a national figure,
you know, third-ranking member for all practical purposes of the House Republican caucus. He has been a vocal a darling of certain national groups, and
the
Tea Party. And the money followed. that's the theme date. So that has followed him. Whereas you look at similar contributions from outside Indiana for John Gregg, it hasn't been as much. And of course, his background was in the Indiana State House. So I guess it shows U.S. Capitol, spending your time there versus spending your time at the Indiana State House.
The donation that the Democrats keep focusing on is the one from the Koch brothers who started the Tea Party. Most voters don't even know who the Koch brothers are.
They don't. I mean, only the most diehard political watchers do, and those people have already made up their minds anyway. I mean, I think one of the more interesting donations is the $1 million from the Republican Governors Association. I mean, you take that away, things get a lot closer. Obviously, you can't take it away. It's money that he can spend.
Yeah.
But it does say a little something about how the fundraising could have been a little closer than it seemed.
And the Republican Governors Association would be doing that primarily because this is an open seat. Mm-hmm. John Gregg can expect similar help from...
I don't know what he can expect from the DGA. I know they're putting staff in for him, and I don't know how much cash they're putting in for him, too. So, I don't think that the fundraising disadvantage... Everybody expected Mike Pence to raise more money. What's interesting to me is the way he's spending it. I mean, these ads he has on are schmaltz city, and they have absolutely no content. I love the National Guard better than you. No, I love the flag better than you.
They're designed to make him likable, right?
Well, they better spend a lot more. But on top of that, they've been spending
they're
that.
Not designed
they've
to make him likable to you.
Well, they've been spending it for months, though. For months. And we have yet to hear the first idea.
But we also are yet to see the first John Gregg ad.
Well, you'll see those soon, and they'll be full of content. They won't be full of wrap me in the flag and skate around with my wife.
You're saying you like him a little more now than you did before the first spot. Just a smidge, right?
No.
If this is a money race, Mike Pence wins. But what you have to worry about is, does John Gregg have enough money to get his message out?
So far to date, watching John Gregg run his campaign is like watching someone try to saddle a cow. It is both confusing and humorous at the same time. He has sputtered coming out of the gate to raise money. Jill Long Thompson was up on TV on air April 1st.
She ran a short burst of ads trying to boost her fundraising,
right.
and it didn't work.
And she was around the state.
Mitch Daniels had more cash on hand than Mike Pence at this particular point, didn't he, Eric?
We were up before Mike Pence went up. We were spending money before.
But you had more cash on hand than Mike Pence has.
He's outraised. Mike Pence has outraised Mitch Daniels in the first two quarters, but we spent it earlier in March. My point is, Jill Long Thompson, because she had a primary, right. She was being seen by Hoosiers all over the state. John Gregg's not. Now we're hearing from Chairman Parker, the race will really start around Labor Day. Can you imagine someone not going up on TV until Labor Day?
Actually, that was the norm.
Not now.
Revolutionary when Evan Bayh went up in August.
I'm talking about the last decade.
From the Gregg campaign, they will tell you, they say that they'll have TV ads up in the summer and soon are the two answers they give, but they don't define that.
But they'll have
content. They need to get up soon.
They'll also have content. They will not be the same schmaltz. If I were a Republican donor, I'd want my money back.
Well, here's what John Gregg's doing instead of TV ads. He came out with a plan for early childhood education this week.
Gregg wants the funding for full-day kindergarten to continue, but points out that most other states already fund at least some programs for preschoolers. In Indiana, only kids in federally funded Head Start programs are eligible for free pre-K classes.
But we are one of only eight states that do anything for these young students that spend no money on pre-kindergarten, and it's time we do that.
Gregg is also proposing a tax credit for families who take advantage of private preschools.
The child cares at a pre-K type schooling where they're getting not just the babysitter, but where they're getting somebody where there's some type of educational component.
Gregg cites no price tag for his plan, but says it's patterned after a Wisconsin plan that costs $85 million.
So, Ann Delaney, where does the money come from?
Well, I mean, if we hadn't paid IBM, we'd be three quarters of the way there right now. So, I mean, there's
but
money.
And butts were candy
it's a $2 billion surplus, remember?
Yeah.
When you look at all the studies about early childhood education, it pays off. I mean, not only in graduation rates, but in fewer people in prisons and all. Mike Pence's response to that is, well, they ought to be raised in strong families.
He said the best preschool is a strong, healthy family.
Great. We agree with that. But what do you do with those kids who don't have that? Do you track them into voc ed and leave them alone, or do you not even teach them critical thinking like the Republican platform in Texas says? They want to stop teaching students how to critically think. I mean, those kinds of things you have to compensate for. This is a great idea, and it's long overdue, as is kindergarten, long overdue for Indiana.
The Gregg campaign is, they're coming out with more ideas than the Pence campaign.
What is the Pence first idea?
The only reason we're having this discussion about this particular question is, as Ann said, we have a $2 billion surplus that happened under this administration. The only reason we have full day K, it's not just a talking point anymore, it's implemented, it's available, not mandatory, but available, because we have the money to do it. And it didn't happen by accident. So we should have these kind of discussions, and I'm happy that we are.
And we didn't, and neither did the $2 billion surplus.
We lost a surplus on John Gregg's watch, happened by accident,
because you had, the state of Indiana got $2 billion in stimulus money from the Obama administration,
which you conveniently forget.
We'll all stipulate that education is a very important issue. It's critical. But we'll also stipulate it's very particularly important to his primary financial backing with the teachers unions and so forth. So I understand why he's doing it. I don't think, however, that education proposals are going to turn this election. And I wonder if there's almost an education reform fatigue because we've been reforming since Bob Orr.
I think it's a winning issue. I'm not saying it's the winning issue, but I think it's a good issue.
Is this more about fundraising?
I think it's about both. I really do. I think a lot of parents would love to have the state providing preschool programs, and I think there's a big percentage of the population who would probably be good with that.
All right, finally, a punching bag depicting President Obama as a boxer with a black eye has been removed from the GOP tent at the Delaware County Fair after some fairgoers complained. Delaware County GOP spokesman Tom Bennington thinks the bag was placed outside the tent by party leaders. It was displayed at various times, Monday through Wednesday at the fair in Muncie. He says the bag was meant in fun to illustrate that Republicans hope to defeat Obama in November, but says he even found it mildly offensive because of how it portrayed the military's commander-in-chief. It was removed after fair visitors, including at least one Republican, voiced concerns. Eric Holcomb, do you approve of the punching bag?
No, campaign shouldn't be about offending anyone, and I'm glad they took it down.
There was a similar punching bag at the GOP state convention in a vendor's booth.
Won't be there in the future if it was. As you know, these vendors have all kinds of creative bumper stickers and pins, and now we see this. So I'm glad it was taken down.
But, I mean, you can find George W. Bush punching bags. I mean,
but it's different from having it displayed at a party event. Eric's absolutely right, and he's right to say that it should have been taken down. It's over the top.
You know what?
And some of the rhetoric since President Obama has been president have been over the top, and all it does is encourage that same kind of hate, and that's
relatively,
a bad thing.
Relatively mild, though, next to the Montana State Republican Convention last month, where there was a bullet-riddled outhouse called Barack Obama's house with sexual innuendo and phone numbers of Michelle.
That's
clearly
Obama
scrolled
on. That's
Indiana
Week
Interview for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Eric Holcomb, John Schwanes of Indiana Lawmakers, and Leslie Weidenbender of the StateHouseFile.com. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in 1,000 different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the 1,000 and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.